You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Think about life in narrative terms. It has an arc, as would the plots of a character in a novel or a film or a fantastic work of opera. And it will inevitably, if it is a recognizably human life, be filled with all sorts of drama, low lights as well as highlights, challenges as well as moments of achievement and euphoria. So there's nothing particularly unnatural about the cycle of life. But that, of course, doesn't mean that it's any easier for you when you're going through one of the periods of trough. And we give names to some of these things. And today we're not going to over-medicalize life. But the truth of the matter is that many of us, once you're in your 30s, late 30s, maybe 40s, 50s, you experience that tag, a midlife crisis. I wonder whether you think you're going through that. You're not sure. You're not sure whether the term itself is just a social invention, a language game, or is it actually something very real, biologically and socially as well? Well, one person who's very passionate about this topic, and we had on the show for the first time a couple of weeks ago, you enjoyed her thoroughly, as did I, is Luisa Niehaus. And Luisa is a trauma psychotherapist. Luisa, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Eusebius.
You know, you're way cooler than this scary title, trauma psychotherapist. I even found myself tweeting, don't worry, we won't over medicalize this particular topic. But it is an important issue because for many people, it may present in ways that might actually require something up the bum.
Exactly. Well, what we're most familiar with is the scenario of the aging playboy. That's what everybody thinks of when they think of a midlife crisis, okay? But there's actually a different category now. There's also the feisty cougar. It's not just limited to males, a midlife crisis. Mm. And midlife crisis is much more complex than just the evident male, aging male driving around in a sports car trying to hook younger women. It goes much deeper than that. There are a number of characteristics that define a midlife crisis. It could be characterized by a desire for change or wanting to change your current status quo in your life, precipitated by feelings of stagnation, boredom, tired of suburbia, a quest for adventure, but most predominantly wanting to capture or recapture your youth and youthful adventures, a sense of wanting to have freedom. It can also be brought upon by caring for aging parents, or seeing your teenage children reach their sexual maturity or adulthood, facing your own impending aging and mortality. Another factor is you want to leave a legacy or mark. You're facing your own impending age, and you're thinking to yourself, what's left? Mm. What more can I do with my life?
Time is running out.
Or do you feel dead-ended in your career? A feeling of also being passed over for younger talent. Mm. So it's a very nuanced, Eusebius. Mm.
What age groups typically are we talking about here? I suppose it's different for different people, right? Well, but typically?
Typically between 35 and 70. It's all relative depending on how much of your life you've lived. Say if you got married at 18.
All the way to 70?
Yeah. Yes.
But then you've got 1 foot in the grave.
Yeah, but at least you're still able to drive a sports car. You'd have the means maybe to drive a sports car. Yeah.
I wonder which of the traits that Luisa has mentioned resonate the most with you. Are you experiencing them in any combination at the moment? Have you experienced them? And I want to test something when I saw the preparation Luisa had done. I want to test the spectrum in terms of which age groups we are talking about. Because I remember speaking to you on Talk at Nine many moons ago when I started my radio career about the midlife crisis, but I was doing it as a non-expert. And I remember the vast majority of people who called in, which is why nighttime radio is such a special, special part of talk radio, were people in their 70s, some in their 80s. Mm. And they said, get over yourself, Eusebius. You'll be all right. I felt like that in my 30s and 40s. By the time you get to your 60s and you are over the fact that you're not yet dead, you actually begin to chill. So I want different people to call in. If you're in your 30s, 40s, are you experiencing typically what Luisa is saying? I think we are probably the biggest ones. I'm turning 39 this year. I'm beginning to bald. Your metabolism is slowing down. You're beginning to wonder, if I die tomorrow, will there be a half-decent obituary about you? 30s and 40s. But I'm also curious whether if you are in your 60s, for example, Does this still resonate with you? Or is this something that you dealt with 15, 20 years ago? And tell us how you got through it if you did. Or maybe you can confirm that Louisa is right. This can onset at any time in your life. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. Share your stories. Ask questions of my expert, who's a psychotherapist. And if you're in Cape Town, on 021-446-0567. All of those elements fascinate me. Let's take the biological first, not because I want to be morbid, but I think the first things that one has to confront, right, are changes in your body. And that can be very, very difficult, sure. Realizing, unlike a five-year-old, that you're not at the center of the universe and you're not going to live forever.
And also, we live in a youth-obsessed society.
We do.
Youth is venerated. So there are so many adverts, so much stuff in the media about being youthful, cosmetic procedures, etc., etc. So there's a major emphasis and focus on staying young.
Yeah.
And no one wants to face the loss of their youth and their beauty and
That's
their
right.
attractiveness.
And it's exacerbated by social media, dating apps,
yeah,
and this kind of thing.
Of course it is. And we don't venerate wisdom, for example, that we would get from the elders.
Mm.
It's not as exciting as being young and sexy.
Mm. We've got Bongi. Bongi, where? Hello.
Baby, you're a good baby.
How are you? I'm good.
I'm counting down to 40. I started at 280 something days. Every day on my Facebook post, I go so many days before my Gambu turns 40. So today is 55 days before Magambu turns 40. And the other day, we had 100 days to go to 40 Braai. On the 40th day, I will do something special. And I will be 40 until I am 41. Now, the question is, really, am I being too extra, or am I, should I just be allowed?
It's a very good question.
Should I be allowed to celebrate my birthday for the next 363
Why
days?
Why not? You sound like you've got an awful lot of enthusiasm.
She always does.
Which is going to carry you forward.
She's been consistent since day one. I don't know, Bongiwe, tell us how you feel. You know the interesting thing about having milestones? I've got a friend, for example, a lot of people in my friend's life got heart attacks at the age of 50, and it was psychologically very important for them to wake up alive and realize they're alive the day after their own 50th birthday. What are you going to do the morning after 40 when you've had this year-long countdown and you discover, eish, life goes on?
Then I'm going to honor the life that was given to me for free by being extra, as consistently as possible, being kind to myself, and putting myself first.
Yeah.
Well, good. That level
Stunning.
Of positivity will hold you through.
Thank you, Bongiwe. I wish all of us could have that kind
exactly.
of zest for life.
That's major zest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the lines. We've got Trish with us. Hello, Trish.
Hi, Eusebius. Hi, Louisa.
Hello.
I'm 36 years old, and I think it was this year when I just, well, I think since last year, actually, been trying to figure out what I want to do with my life, because every career milestone that I had set for myself, I'd sort of achieved, and I found that it wasn't for me. And I've decided that I hate this career, but I don't know what else I want to do. And at 36, I still haven't bought a house because I feel like it's tying me down. And I can't make any decisions about the future because it's like, I don't know what I want.
Hmm.
I always thought I knew what I wanted, but it's been very disappointing, and it's been nothing at all that I expected.
Trish, you've raised a really important point, which midlifers experience. Sometimes when they leave university or school and they look and they decide that they have a certain number of goals that they need to achieve. And people rarely reassess these goals later on in midlife. They wake up and they think, whose life have I been living? Has it been my parents' life? Has it been my parents' dreams? Or are they my dreams? And people don't often stop to assess whether these dreams and aspirations are relevant.
I hear what you're saying. And yeah, but now I've just decided that I'm just going to just let it be and just live and just go on with the daily grind because it's become so stressful to even think about.
Why do you want to live a daily grind? Life is much more meaningful than that.
Because I've been trying to figure it out so hard that I keep getting frustrated. So what I do now is that I travel. So I work for about 3 months and then I go off.
But then that's maybe where your passion lies. Maybe that you need to do something in travel.
It is, but it's just moving from the career. I mean, I'm a lawyer. Moving from that to travel is, I can't see how I would do it. So I feel stuck. So
Trish,
what I make money so I can travel.
Can I ask you a question from the Peanut Galleria, as Louisa's a sidekick? Why do you what gives you reason to get out of bed in the morning?
Because I know that I'm taking a trip in 2 months' time.
That's stunning.
That's your passion. Why do you want to be a lawyer when it's not your passion? People make very big career changes during midlife as well. They decide that the life that they'd chosen is not the life that they wanted.
Yeah, I wanted to be a lawyer since I was 9 years old watching LA Law. And,
but you don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, thank you so much for the insight. And yeah, you are right. It probably is travel.
Yep.
I want to stay with Trish's story, and thank you for sharing it, Trish, before we take more calls. And just meditate for me a little bit on this point. Obviously, it depends on many things, including how risk-averse you are or your risk appetite. But a lot of people in their 30s, in particular, struggle to accept, particularly those of us, ironically enough, who are middle class and have more exit options than poor people, that it is okay to change the direction and the course of your life. We're not saying every one of our listeners must now quit their jobs this afternoon, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
People really struggle to embrace their freedom to try something else. For example, let's say Trish quits a job, theoretically speaking, and she goes traveling around the world. She becomes a travel writer. Let's say in a year's time, she realizes, actually, I hate traveling. Trish has more opportunity to re-enter the legal career than many other people who are truly stuck and don't have freedom.
And don't have options.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I always say, assess your life carefully. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater as well. Don't pack it all up and go and be a DJ in Ibiza when you've got to look after you've got to look after your kids, you've got to pay your mortgage. Have a look at how you can incorporate the sense of adventure in your life in a constructive way.
Yeah. Okay, 20 minutes after 11, we'll take a bit of a breather here. We'll take more of your calls. Does any of this resonate with you? Any questions you have, stories you want to share? How do you deal with a crisis about the state of your life in your 30s, 40s, 50s, or maybe even when you were older? More on the other side of this.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
We're talking about midlife, which is a time of flux, particularly if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s. What difficult conversations have you had with yourself? What are you going through? Bodily changes, maybe changes in your life circumstance. You have decided to take the plunge, new career. Maybe you suddenly got divorced. Maybe you were always, I don't know, had an unhealthy relationship with a substance, and that has been a momentous change for you. Or just, as our last caller, just not quite having a sense of your place in the universe. And we're talking with Louisa Niehaus about this. She is a trauma psychotherapist. The word crisis is part of our everyday vocabulary. Midlife and crisis goes together. But it doesn't have to be a crisis, right?
No, definitely not. Crisis, for me, is when the symptoms have already manifested. You've already decided that you are going to go and live out in the boonies and do organic farming away from everybody else, or that you are going to pursue an affair with a younger man or a younger woman. But prior to that, be aware of the symptoms, the rumblings, what I call the malaise. You're bored, but you haven't yet acted out on it. Maybe you're bored in your relationship, your marriage. You have a yearning to pack it all in and escape. These are the signs to be watching out for. sure, we all have temptations from time to time, and life isn't as exciting as we want it to be.
Yeah.
So what people are trying to do is to recapture their youth, recapture their freedom, have new choices. But if you feel depressed and locked in at this stage, it's possibly because you're experiencing the transition, which, if it's left unchecked, could lead to the midlife crisis.
But the opposite of that is that you could also, like someone discovering for the first time that they get turned on by boys and rather than by girls, it could be an awakening.
Oh, yes,
and you might
definitely.
Actually, and then the more appropriate vantage, the more appropriate attitude to adopt, presumably, and I'd love people to call in if they've had any kind of experience along these lines, is instead of seeing yourself as having undergone a crisis, is that you have now, I don't know, got in touch with a more authentic part of yourself that for all sorts of reasons, often social constructions that are imposed on us, that had been hidden until the age of 43.
And that's the point. This is a transition. It is most definitely an awakening. There's a different way of reframing this. This could be an opportunity to live a far more authentic and richer life.
Absolutely. Vivian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sylvia. How are you?
We're very well. Thank you for picking up the phone today. What do you want to share with us?
Sylvia, you know, I just want to share my experience with you.
Yes.
At the age of 51, I was retrenched. I used to be a laboratory manager out in Rustenburg. And, you know, being retrenched, I didn't feel that there was a need to really look out for a job at the same at that moment. I had a passion for cooking. I had a passion for teaching kids. And now, 15 months later, I'm actually using that passion to make a career out of it.
How fabulous. You've turned it around. You found your passion.
Yeah, yes, I mean, I cook food. I do functions, corporate functions. I cook food from home and sell to households. I do a lot of tuitions every day of the week. And that's supporting me. That's sustaining me.
So within a difficulty, you found your passion, you found your core, and you've turned it around beautifully.
And then that's what I enjoy.
That's great. Did you have anxiety at the time, Vivian? Did you worry about how this will play out?
No, not really, because you know I was doing a bit of tuition while I was working, and I used to do cooking as well. And what I thought is that when I got changed, I didn't stress because I said, let me take this passion that I have to the next level, and that's exactly what I've done.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing your story with us, Vivian.
Thank you.
How much of this depends on your inclination?
Yeah.
In other words, some people like predictability. Mm. They like habits that are formed. And sometimes they don't take the plunge to go travel, become a travel writer, quit your job as a banker, see whether you can make it as a novelist, because there are certain things that you can predict with certainty, like regular income, for example. And maybe you don't want to embrace the kind of uncertainty that comes with taking the plunge.
It's true. Some people are much more cautious. However, if you are truly unhappy, you will find that these things will keep on knocking you and knocking you and knocking you until you sit and wake up and do something about it, even if it's just to channel that energy into a hobby. But you have to listen, because otherwise you just become unhappier and unhappier, and you affect the people's lives around you.
Haleen, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to share, I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I'm 67, going on 68.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel that I have left a legacy in the sense that I've worked very hard over all my life. I produced two children who are doing very, very well. And I've written a lot and, made an impact professionally. And now I've just finished one of my biggest jobs ever, and I'm looking ahead and I'm going to stop working. And I'm really looking forward to this now. I'm seeing what else is there, you know, what else does life hold? And it's quite exciting, I have to say.
We're hearing such wonderful stories about how people have navigated the transition into midlife. And you seem to have ticked all the boxes. And now you're looking forward to the next phase, which could bring a lot more exciting things and challenges and adventures.
Let's go to the EW.
You're CBS Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
26 minutes before noon, we're in conversation with trauma psychotherapist Louisa Niehaus, and we're talking about midlife. We're not adding the word crisis because it might also just be a period of your life that reveals to you all sorts of important insights about who you truly are or want to be. And then you make those changes and it doesn't have to be crisis ridden. Of course, for some of you, it might well be a crisis, in which case do share your stories with us and we'll do our best to help you out. If you're in Cape Town, you can give us a call on 021-446-0567 and in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702. Louisa, we don't want to essentialize men and women, but I suppose one has got to ask though, nevertheless, are there, in terms of the literature or just from your professional experience, differences typically between how, of those people who do experience awakenings or crises, differences between men and women?
Yes. Traditionally, female midlife has been characterized by the onset of menopause. So for women, it's been more a physiological marker rather than a phenomenological marker. Mm. And this is not entirely accurate because given the equanimity between the sexes, women now are being somewhat predatory. I mean, you have a look at the cougar syndrome that's come about in recent years. Women are just being as predatory as men in terms of finding a youthful partner in order for them to reaffirm their beauty, their virility. So There are some correlations between male and female midlife crises. Mm. And it's not, as the literature has traditionally told us, that female midlife is characterized by menopause.
Mm. Okay, Wilfred, good morning to you.
Morning, Isibis.
Welcome.
Hello, Wilfred.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I want to find out, I am 43 years old, married with two kids, love my family to bits, but I find that when I left university, I was very clear about what I wanted. I wanted the house, the car, the family, and everything. And I reach a point where I've accomplished all of it, and it seems like it's almost like I stopped dreaming for further. Mm. So I find myself in this like wilderness where I don't really know what next. Mm. Don't really enjoy the job very much. So it's just I'm in this wilderness where I don't know where to go next. Before I was very clear, but now it's like I've lost my clarity.
Mm. Yeah, Wilfred, mm. This is really typical of one of the symptoms or the symptoms in a midlife transition before it becomes a crisis, because you're feeling stagnated.
Yes.
And possibly a sense of disillusionment and asking yourself, is this all there is?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, there is. I mean, it's getting out of bed in the morning is a task. There's nothing to look forward to. I mean, it's we're living for the weekend, basically looking forward to a Friday so you can get to at least and just relax and stuff. But there's no joy. I remember working until 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah, there's no sense of adventure. The thing is, those dreams and aspirations which you decided on, however many years ago, are perhaps not particularly relevant for you now. Because you have moved into a different phase of your life. As you've said, you've correctly achieved those goals. And perhaps it's time now for a reassessment of who you are now and where you want to go to next. And this is where people in midlife experience the crisis and don't look at the transitionary phase, because you are in a very important phase and you are able to now make decisions and change things that will not perhaps have disastrous effects on your family or your life. You can choose to have a much more richer
Wilfred, life. Is that a process of self-examination that you have undergone, reflecting on redirecting potentially your life in some way, or have you been too scared to go there?
It's an issue of where you say to yourself, well, look, you have responsibilities. Mm. At this point, you can't have uncertainties at this point in your life because you've got responsibilities. And I guess the worry is obviously depending on where you decide to go, there'll be repercussions for everybody else.
But there'll be repercussions if you don't as well. Mm. So it is an uncomfortable stage. Any transitionary stage is uncomfortable. It's like it's an awakening.
Mm.
And you need to start looking at things that, like one of the previous callers did, give you joy and happiness and where your interests lie.
Yeah.
It's a metamorphosis.
Okay, so just watching closely to see what actually gets me excited.
Yes, and there will be markers.
Do you think you know what gets you excited? Let's assume you had zero responsibilities just for 1 second. I know it's an impossible thing to imagine. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have any, what would you be doing right now? Or what would you
That's
like to try
thing.
Out?
I draw a blank. That's what actually worries me the most. Like, I can't pinpoint. There are people who are very clear about things like that. I draw a blank.
But why don't you just allow your mind to play? Say, say whatever comes to mind, even if it's outrageous. Don't be responsible. Think.
Mm. I think it's okay if you draw a blank because, I don't know, I mean, I'm the wrong person to be a BFF with because I'm so anti-establishment. I think of so many friends of mine who are lawyers, not all of them, but some of them who are lawyers, some who are management consultants, some who are accountants, investment bankers. I have friends in each one of these categories, and I do not from the outside envy their lives because they've had it mapped out. And I sometimes think to myself, they've never even allowed themselves to have a crisis because they're simply getting on with what they think is a good life. And a template for a good life that society has handed down. I mean, that's a terrible rut to be stuck in.
Yeah, look, the one time I remember, well, if I have to point back to a time, was when I was in university, and how I made my money through university was DJing.
And
DJing is the one thing where I lose myself. I can do it hours and hours on end. But, again, the responsibility and the realities of being a DJ, how far can you go now? I'm 43. My good years are behind me. I had some really good years when I DJed, and I was good at what I did.
But, Wilfred, it doesn't mean that it's over. You can pursue it as a hobby.
DJ Fresh is still as fresh as you was 20 years ago.
Don't give it up.
And maybe we can talk there practically because I think we need to try and give people some practical advice here. How can Wilfred begin to incorporate some play into his life without feeling that he's risking it all?
See, you've hit on such a good point, Eusebius. We don't play. We become responsible, middle-aged, boring, drudgy adults. We forget to play. If we bring play into our life, it's much more exciting. There's so much more adventure that we can experience. So what Wilfred would need to do is to just get his decks out and start playing music again, play music to the kids, teach the kids music, maybe do a couple of gigs for his friends or family.
Yeah.
It's a start.
Which is not quitting your job.
No.
So it doesn't have to feel like it is momentous.
No, and you never know what opportunities could come from him just doing some part-time DJing.
Joseph, good morning and welcome to the conversation.
Hi, how are you?
We're very well, thank
Hello.
You, sir.
Good, man. You know, yesterday you touched on a subject that was also so close to my heart because I'm really going through a crisis at the moment, and maybe it's the second day that you're speaking and it's just pulling at my heartstrings. You know, I'm 45, and as Wilfred was saying, you know, when you've achieved and you end up, I've started to neglect the way I look, the things I used to be so cautious about, you know, when it comes to promiscuous sexual activity and things like that, things that, you know, you never used to just do because it was not supposed to be done. And I've reached a stage where I just don't like this life anymore. I am in a rut. And it's you know, sometimes you want to talk and you want to talk and you want to talk, but no one's listening.
How old are you, Joseph, did you say?
I'm 45.
So, Joseph, do you feel that you're having a crisis? Because I heard two conflicting things, that you feel that you're letting yourself go physically, you don't dress the way you used to, but at the same time you're engaging in promiscuous behavior and you're doing different things that you hadn't done before. So,
but it's wrong. But it's things that I never did before. I was very cautious. And
sure, but remember,
a
midlife crisis is similar to a teenage rebellion.
Yeah.
And when teenagers rebel, they're contained by their parents. When adults rebel, there's no one to contain them. So you are having a rebellion. So possibly you were contained for a lot of your life and you've had to be answerable to people and you've had to be responsible. And all of a sudden, adult you has kicked off and said, I'm not doing that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
True?
Yes, and you know what makes me angry is that this neglect. I was a very person that used to dress to the hill, you know, and really go all out, but I've lost it in the last 2 years, and I just don't feel I'm being.
Do you know what got you there, Joseph? Has there been any dramatic change in circumstance for you? A loss of job, income, a change in career in the last 2 years?
You know, maybe not being taken serious at the place that I'm working at, you know, and having no freedom to do the. I've got a passion for the job that I do. I love what I do, but I'm so restricted, you know.
And that's where your rebellion is coming in. The word I'm hearing is freedom. You want freedom. So therefore, you're acting out that freedom in your personal life. And you're becoming a bit of a rebel because you're not caring about your appearance as well. You're like, stuff the world. I'm just going to dress how I am. I don't care. I used to be so well-dressed. You're having a rebellion and a reaction to not being heard and seen.
So what can you do about it?
Well, how important is this job to you?
I like what I do. I love the company around me. I enjoy being the person that I am at work, but the restrictions... The confinement.
What are these confinements? What do they look like?
You don't have to tell us where you work, but what kind of job do you do, if broadly speaking?
I'm in a call center.
Okay.
So what are the confinements?
Not planning some of the activities, not planning, not being consulted when it comes through to the way forward and things like that. So I feel I've got the expertise. I've been doing this call center job for the last 19-20 years. So for me, I love what I do. I love the interaction that I get, and I'm just feeling
so. Sounds like there's a loss of control that's happening for you at work, which is having an impact on you, and it might be worth, with all your years of experience, speaking to someone senior to see what you can do to gain some control back. Because you're acting out the lack of control in your personal life. Mm.
Okay, 13 minutes before noon. Good advice there. Sometimes one needs to cascade this conversation one level down. It's about coaching, mentoring. Speak to someone else at the call center. Or maybe imagine a life where you're not at the call center, Joseph, and take a chance on yourself. Particularly if the status quo is not working out for you. We'll take a bit of a break. Paul, Gideon, Brett, we're going to take your calls on the other side.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Eusebius Makaiser.
Brett, good morning to you.
Hi. The question that I have is, like, as you move into the future, people are going to start living longer and longer. Are these moments of, you know, changing perspectives going to change, or are we just going to add them to people's lifespan? So when you get to 120, you're going to wonder, oh my God, was my life worth it?
Well, presumably the answer is yes.
And all our experiences are relevant at whatever point they arrive at in our lives.
Mm. So the life expectancy is neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. It can creep in at any point in your life.
And you're still going to have an experience somewhere, a transition, somewhere during that trajectory.
Yeah, there'll be an arc, however long it is. Gideon, good morning. Hello, Gideon.
Hello. Hi, I'm 50 years old. I've been running my own business, transitioning my son and slowly learning the ropes. I've registered for an LLB degree, which is exciting. It's an adventure. It's opening up new possibilities. I could not define that it's a phase. I thought it was just something that I wanted to do, and an opportunity presents itself. I have time, and this young man, when I'm going to school, it allows him space to run the business without deferring to me all the time, so I can relate to the conversation.
Yeah, we don't want to pathologize it.
Yeah.
It's just that we're bringing awareness to what happens to some people at various phases of their life. You seem to have done this naturally, Gideon. I mean, to be studying an LLB at 50 is fabulous. It's going to do you the world of good, even in terms of keeping your neural pathways alive and awake into old age.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I just thought I would make a contribution. I can relate to it. Thank you, Ben.
And that's important, isn't it? Because sometimes the language can be empowering for some people who think that they're undergoing a crisis. Mm. The idea of an awakening could have been a very important insight this hour that can really help them not panic. On the other hand, we also don't want someone to go, oh, shucks, I've just signed up for a BCom. I'm having a crisis.
No, exactly. And that's why in the courses that I run on midlife, I'm very careful with the words that I use. I call it midlife mastery when people are stuck. Because we often think it's a crisis, a male, female midlife crisis. But it's more than that. It's a transition.
Mm. And what are some of the tools then that you impart for people to be able to handle it much better?
Some people are unaware that they're experiencing a transition. They feel unhappy. They feel stuck. They feel stagnant. Hmm. And they don't know where to go and what to do. And I have a series of applications that I use to elicit what some of that stuckness is.
Hmm. Paul, good morning to you and welcome.
Eusebius, hi, good morning, and good morning to your guest.
Hello, Paul.
Two years ago, I was in a situation where I had a job as a personal trainer in the mornings at a gym, and then I had another job where I'd go and work for like 3 or 4 hours, for the rest of the day doing something completely different. And I was for quite some time, I was I was not very happy, but I couldn't quite figure out what it was. But it was just seeming to sort of like get worse. And anyway, the next minute, at that time I was 56. And I had a flashback to a time when I was about 18, and I was—I've also been in a relationship with another guy for the end of this year. We will be celebrating 40 years together, and all of a sudden, I was sort of like plunged into a crisis where I didn't really know what was going on, but I felt this total disconnect with my partner. And you know, I felt like I wanted to move on. So it was actually quite strange. It was literally a case of I wanted to be out of the house the next day. You know, it was terrible. But I felt that there was something that wasn't quite right, because how could I feel like a month earlier, everything was fine in the relationship, and now all of a sudden I was like just feeling totally different.
Mm.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, it actually grew worse, and then I was seeing my doctor, and he gave me some advice in terms of what I should do at work, because I was finding that I wasn't able to handle things, and I started taking tablets for anxiety and that. And then I took a month off work. I was very lucky in that they were able to find a replacement for the time. I went to Australia to my sister. I came back. I was depressed while I was there. 2 days later, after I got back, I had a complete meltdown, and I landed up in a psychiatric clinic in Parktown for 2.5 weeks.
Hmm.
And I had intense counselling on a daily basis. It was I needed the crisis to happen to help me to actually shift, and for someone to guide me through the process. And what actually the psychologist that I was seeing, the most important thing that was happening for me at the time was her telling me that don't leave. And she said to me that she knows so many people that she's counseled in the past where they've experienced this, something similar, and then they've left their partners, and 2 years later they totally regret it.
Mm-hmm.
And she helped me to work through, he had just retired.
Mm-hmm.
2 years prior to that, and that was, she said, that was one of the things that started like being a bit of a mirror for me.
Mm.
There was in the, you know, where I was doing the training, I mean, I had I have to admit, I had a slight infatuation for somebody, and that sort of came to an end, and I no longer had the inspiration to want to be at the gym. You know, that was one of the reasons that sort of kept me going. I realized that, you know, afterwards when I started looking back. And
how did you get through this, Paul? What eventually allowed you to find a new kind of anchor that gave you a sense of purpose very quickly?
Well, she we went through a whole process, and she started telling me that, you know, things could work out, but we started needing to do things different. And there were a whole lot of things that we hadn't done in the whole 40 years of our relationship, for example, putting financial things in place and all of that sort of stuff. And we did all of those things in the space of a month afterwards. And I was so lucky that my partner was so willing to try and help. I think he got the fright of his life.
You know, Paul, this is a common thing that I see with clients, is that they want to go off and have an affair and leave their partner that they've been with for many years. And they go off, they have this fabulous adventure, and then a while later, they so miss the comfort and the familiarity of the other.
We're going to leave it there for today, Louisa. Thank you so much for your expertise.
Thank you.